Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Lieutenant Milton Torres was ordered to keep silent about what happened. Now we know the details. May 20th, 1957. He scrambled his Sabre jet from a base in England with orders to arm all weapons and fire on sight. Before he could fire, the erratic, bright blip on his radar simply disappeared.
There are some cases, and it's about 5%, that can't be explained. They are genuine unknown. I have no explanation for the Rendlesham Forest incident.
It was Christmas night, 1980. Guards at two US Air Force bases in eastern England thought they saw a plane crash in these woods. Two nights later, the lights returned.
There's no doubt about it. This is weird.
To the left.
Yeah, different
two lights.
One light to the front, one light to the left.
Keep flashlights off.
There's something very, very strange.
When we've been in Blair Witch.
Some believe this is still an alien destination.
Do you see aliens?
Yes, we have done so, yes.
Good Morning America, Nick Watt, ABC News.
We played that bumper, which is a radio talk for setting up the scene for the next interview. It had Nick Pope in it, and Nick was talking about, I think, a quote he made on Good Morning America some time back about Rendlesham Forest, in which he said he didn't know what to make of it. And Peter has some thoughts about Nick Pope that we'll be talking to him about in a minute, plus a few other things as we cover the UFO scene with Peter Robbins in detail here in a moment. He's one of the best investigative reporters out there, and no one's done a better job on Rendlesham and the UFO story than Peter, as far as I'm concerned. And we will be talking about several things here in addition to what's happening with Peter. Before I bring him on, I wanted to mention something that kind of fascinated me. And that is a special report that I got. A guy sent me an email out of the blue, and he's talking about the Smoky Mountains in the West. Well, everybody knows where the Smoky Mountains are in the United States, and they're not in the West, they're in the East. And there's an interesting thing, evidently, suspicious activities going on in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, according to this email. And I checked into it a little bit, and evidently there's some truth to it. Trail riders, campers, and park rangers, they all say they see suspicious activity going on, digging an underground cavern, maybe a complete big secret base now that we didn't know about. And there's an ex-military man that came forward as well. I did find on the web. He came out on February 16th. He released a statement. He had some photos and maps and the exact location of where this underground base may be, and it'd be interesting. So Peter will probably have something to say about that too, but I just wanted to mention that before we brought Peter on. And Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jerry. It's good to be back with you.
It's always good to have you on. Have you ever done any research or writing or investigating of underground bases?
Only around the one alleged to be in Suffolk, England, that ties closely into the whole Rendlesham Forest story.
You're going to have to tell me a little bit about that part of it. I didn't know about that part of it. Tell me. There's a.
Oh yes.
There's an underground base or a rumor of one.
Well, it enters very strongly into a number of accounts relative to the whole Rendlesham Forest events of December 1980. In fact, Larry Warren, my co-author on the British bestseller Left at East Gate, which is his account and our research into those events, was taken against his will after he was debriefed in December of 1982, a facility that we locate far below the RAF Bentwaters and its sister base, RAF Woodbridge, complex. It has been brought up by others as well as used as a setting for a great fictional UFO book by our friend Nick Pope, a terrific book that was not published in this country. So, yes, I do feel very strongly that there is one in England and maintain that they probably exist in different places around the world. Regarding the one that you've just spoken about in the Smoky Mountains area, I know basically what you know, but I find it fascinating that we're getting a series of reports and accounts of activities in that area that people associate with classified underground locations. I also feel from my studies of the UFO phenomena post-war that our government has very cleverly used UFOs as a cover at times since the 40s to mask or deflect attention from legitimate UFO activity, and at other times, perhaps even more cleverly, have suggested that UFO activity is responsible for or the place to keep our eyes on, when in reality it is a highly classified, very terrestrial military operation or location. So we have to be fairly cautious in approaching this topic because it's a bit of a shell game, and I think we're being played in both directions. I think they both exist, but I'm not sure what to make of the Smoky Mountain reports right now, except that I find them fascinating.
Yeah, you know, we talk about hidden in plain sight.
Yes.
That seems to be kind of what the government does a lot of times.
Yes.
I've often thought about Dulce in those terms.
Yes.
Out in New Mexico, a place that we both like very much.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Nick Pope and his book.
Yes.
I don't know much about it. Do you know much about it yet? What's he writing about exactly?
Well, my best understanding is that you know, for months, several years leading up to the announcement last autumn by Rendlesham Forest witnesses John Burroughs and Jim Peniston, that they wanted to write a book about their experiences, which we all know a certain amount about at Rendlesham. I think they had the very good fortune to kind of be taken on by Nick Pope, somebody with an internationally recognized reputation and already author of four UFO-related books, four UFO-related books, that to the best of my knowledge now, Nick will be writing the book or writing most of the book about John and Jim's experience. I don't know much more than that now, but...
Now Peter, I'm just a distant watcher of this Rendlesham thing,
yeah.
But these two guys... They seem to be doing everything in the world to distract people at times.
Well, there is, I guess you're referring to the most contentious allegation, specifically of Jim Peniston's, which John seems to be going along with, that a long time ago, he was given information that convinces him that the intelligence is behind this very well-known and very well-documented series of events involving UFOs in December 1980, centered around an American air base in England, RAF Bentwaters, now decommissioned, was the result not of anything except time travelers from our future. Now, Jim has absolutely insisted that when that book comes out, it will include evidence that supports his belief. My feeling is, let's see the evidence, and then we'll make our best decision. For me, and I've only spent 37 years of my life looking into this subject, I realize the more I know, the less I know in a way, and I'm not playing games with words. It's a subject that goes beyond understanding on a certain level. And so when somebody says to me they have the definitive precise answer, or they know, you know, that such and such aliens come from planet X and they've been coming here for 487,000 years and these are the reasons, I am always very circumspect. I've never been privy to such information. I'm a fairly plodding, you know, nuts and bolts investigative writer here, but I've certainly spent a lot of time in the field. I worked as Bud Hopkins' assistant for more than 20 years, so I'm very well versed in the extraordinarily serious and complex subject of UFO abductions. And I need to be convinced. And I think, again, that Jim and John were very fortunate that Nick agreed to write this book, or write this book with them. I don't know what the disposition is going to be once it comes out, and I don't think we should expect to see this book any earlier than the end of this year, depending on, you know, how much time Nick has to work with them and write the book. So the questions are still up in the air, and I know for anyone interested in the case, we will look forward to this book coming out and seeing if Jim can back up his allegations.
Yeah, you and I've talked about this off the air and on the air a lot.
Yeah. That's right.
And the time travel aspect, I have trouble putting my arms around.
Yeah, me
but
too.
But at the same time, I guess we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't keep an open mind about it.
That's right. And sometimes it almost feels like our minds are so open, our brains are going to fall out.
Yeah.
We know that we're dealing with the unknown. And when somebody tells us they know definitive answers to what the unknown is all about, I found that they tend to fall apart upon close examination, or that there's an agenda, or it's based on a belief, which they may confuse with empirical fact, or are so convinced of the rightness of their views that they become kind of closed mind. So I try to not just be open-minded, but approach every allegation, every case, every investigation, starting once again at the baseline and reestablishing these things. I think, Jerry, it's also very important for those of us that have been in the field long enough and seen enough information and true physical evidences, anecdotal evidence, witness testimony that all interlock and triangulate and back each other up, that you and I, in a funny way, we no longer have the luxury of disbelief. We know we're dealing with a genuine anomalous phenomena, which may have a number of causes or origins. And so we have to be particularly skeptical in the best inquisitive sense of the word in approaching each new case. Otherwise, our enthusiasm will kind of run away with us, and we'll become nothing more than believers ourselves.
That's true. We want to be objective, and at the same time, we don't want to eliminate anything. In other words, I don't want to be a naysayer, a nabob of negativity. You know?
Yes, the great Spiro Agnew.
Yeah, but at the same time, I just find the physical parameters of time travel would seem to be limiting itself. It looks like you'd be setting off a whole lot of unintended consequences.
Well, again, this is a giant cosmic can of worms and a Pandora's box inside a Pandora's box. Theoretically, who are any of us to say that the next person's theory is, you know, completely out of hand or unrealistic? We're dealing with the unbelievable every day, the unacceptable, the seemingly impossible according to conventional laws of physics and science and history and all that.
Well, and we've seen some physical laws of science being violated routinely now.
Yes. So, yes, and we have since the early days of post-war history here in America and around the world. Again, I can only say I wish Jim and John well on this project. I think that they're very fortunate to have Nick working on this with them, because he has ensured that they've gotten a first-class publisher, and because he is already an internationally recognized figure in the field. When this book comes out, whatever it contains, will receive a lot of attention. And again, how well they're going to be able to back up their allegations and beliefs remains to be seen.
I want to talk to you about something that we all deal in. It's an unspoken thing, but at the same time, it's not necessarily the subject that it sounds like I'm going to lead into. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to lead into is disclosure. And yes. Stephen Bassett evidently is having another conference, huh?
Well, yes, so I understand. And although Steve hasn't given out details yet, this one sounds like his most ambitious effort to date, and I intend to be there. It's not going to be so much a conference, as I understand it from Steve, as a series of day after day of credible witnesses, and not witnesses centered around military personnel, retired commercial and military pilots, retired government officials. And what he has done has been to lease the prestigious National Press Club, where we have had different conferences over the years and various UFO-related press events, from April 29th to May 5th. So we're talking about something that's close to a week long. And I was so fascinated by the ambitiousness of this project that I've already got a hotel room reservation, and I'm planning to be down there for the entire 5 or 6 days, and very much looking forward to it. The details have not come out yet, but I'm sure once they do, you and I will hear about them, and you'll be letting your listeners know, and I'll certainly be letting my friends know around the world via Facebook and other information platforms. But more power to him. We wish him the best, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know, when we talk about Stephen Bassett and his efforts over the years, you got to say one thing. This guy keeps on going.
He sure does. He's the Energizer Bunny of ufology.
Yeah. And maybe a lot of people get a little jaded, but they don't understand the media.
Yes.
If you and I have talked about this once, we've talked about it 20 times.
At least.
But it takes 20 times for people to suddenly dawn on them.
Yeah.
It's just the way it works.
You're right there, Jerry.
You know, the advertising business I've been in all my life, and repetition is what it's about.
It's and true.
You keep hearing the repetitive stories and facts. And then pretty soon people begin to accept it.
Well,
just like we were talking about time travel.
Yeah.
3 years ago, that was a far out subject.
Yeah.
Now you're a responsible researcher. I'm a responsible broadcaster, and we're talking about it with a straight face.
Well, we are. I'll tell you what my most serious concern is here. If they are not able to prove their case, but just keep the idea of time travelers from our future associated with the subject of the Rendlesham Forest events, which I am absolutely convinced, and I put my career on it, is as important a UFO-related event as we have ever documented in the research community. The idea in the media, and they will seize on a lead line like time travelers from our future, like ducks on a June bug, and it sounds so loopy in the straight public mind that they will have a field day with it. And if indeed it doesn't pan out, I think a lot of people who might have taken or who are currently taking the subject more or less seriously and want to know more and want to see more of the hard physical evidences that people like Larry and I spent years collecting, having analyzed, and presenting in public forums, serious attention may be drawn away from the case, and it may hurt it overall. I hope that will not come to pass.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. We are going to be doing something on the 15th of March here at Inception Radio. We're going to broadcast a conference. We've already done two that Noe Torres has produced.
Oh, yes.
And we're talking about presenting the entire presentation on the radio. I've been to a lot of conferences where we do interviews.
Yes.
But this is a new tack. We're actually broadcasting the presentations.
I think that would be so cool and so valuable. Plus, Noe is one of my favorite people in the field. He is rock solid. He's responsible. He is both a scholar and a gentleman, and one of the nicest people in the work, as far as I'm concerned.
And, that's right. Stanton Friedman and many of them have been booked in there, and we broadcast their presentations, and it doesn't seem to hurt anybody's reputation and actually gets the word out.
Well, you bet, much more so than no matter how many people you can get in a hotel conference center or other venue.
I'm telling you, we did one in Presidio, Texas, a couple of months ago, and the audience numbers on that particular conference were not in the thousands, not in the tens of thousands, but much more than that. What we're going to be doing on the 15th for the Friday night, and then Saturday and Sunday, is replaying it each time, and it builds up, and it's called the Out of This World Conference at Edinburgh, Texas, of all places.
Well, a lot of good UFO work has come out of Texas, and there are a lot of great people working there. And what you're doing here for me is nothing short of a public service and something in the great national good, because if all fear, when you come right down to it, is fear of the unknown, then all of the anxiety that people hide behind sarcasm or condescension or all the silliness that comes with ridicule of the UFO subject, then UFOs are kind of the godfather of fear of the unknown. And every time there's a conference like this, and especially in a case where we get a senior distinguished broadcaster like you with the guts to get it out to a much wider audience via your radio show, it's a gift to the public as far as I'm concerned.
It certainly is. You know, a lot of interesting conferences coming up.
You mentioned
Texas. Paula Harris last year had an interesting conference, and she's got one down in Sebring, Florida this year.
Well, she sure does, and it's one of a number that I wanted to let your listeners know about tonight. It's coming up fairly soon, relatively. It's going to be May 10th to 12th in Sebring, and for anybody that wants information on it, all they need to do is go to starworksusa.com. And I'm not only proud to be associated with the conference as a speaker, I'm also going to be emceeing it. And it includes some great colleagues like Kathleen Martin and Yvonne Smith, Karen Dolan, the great Grant Cameron, and somebody who is in a very unique place here, Paul Hellier. Paul has the unique distinction of being a retired Secretary of Defense for our neighbor North Canada. And Paul is now retired and can speak out on his very insider knowledge regarding the reality of UFOs. And not only is this conference a great bargain in terms of the modest price associated with it, the lovely venue and location, but it will probably be, from what Paul says, the very last time he makes a public appearance to discuss this. He's already in his 80s, I think. And even if I weren't already woven into the fabric of the event, I sure wouldn't want to miss this one. So I encourage your listeners, especially those in the southeastern part of the United States, to go online, go to starworksusa.com, and register for this conference. And early registration, I believe, is still open, and it is a bargain. So don't hesitate. This is going to be one to remember.
You know, Paula Harris, I never will forget the time at there in Laughlin. She came flying in, literally, from Canada, where she'd gotten this exclusive interview with Paul Hillier.
Yeah, she was.
Remember that? And she presented it during the lunch hour. She wasn't even scheduled. And
yeah.
And they've had a relationship built up over the years.
Yes.
And
I don't think he would speak if it wasn't her putting it on.
No,
so
Paul is not a young man anymore.
That's right.
And so this may be the last time you get a chance. In fact, I can certainly understand with all of the things that are happening in my life. It gets more difficult all the time to do these personal appearances.
Yeah.
And
you're absolutely right. And again, this is a former Canadian Minister of Defense. We are never going to get another chance, realistically. I mean, who knows? Maybe at some point some retired American secretaries of defense will come forward. But you know what? I just can't see Dick Cheney addressing a UFO conference.
No.
Well, or Donald Rumsfeld.
No. Maybe Chuck Hagel.
Maybe. We'll wish him the best. But right now we only got this one.
You know, about Chuck Hagel, it's off topic, but I'm going to mention it anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's refreshing that they're appointing an enlisted man to head the Pentagon.
Holy moly, what a breath of fresh air. And I love the fact that he's a Republican, that he knows what war is like, unlike these yeses that got as many deferments as they possibly could while supporting the war. I'm not uncomfortable saying that I had my share of deferments back in the Vietnam era, but I was not. I was very much against that war, and I think history has proved me right. This is terrific, I think, having somebody with an actual military background from the opposing party, and I think the president chose wisely here, and it's interesting the attacks that have come at him, but we will wish him the best and hope that he is kind of Secretary for Defense.
Mark my word, Chuck may come up with a surprise or two, even in the UFO arena. You never know.
He seems like an independent thinker and a decent guy, again, with a respectable background.
Yeah, as long as we're talking about conferences, John Venturi's got another MUFON conference going on, doesn't he, coming up?
Well, he sure does. And that one is coming up the weekend before Paulus. It's coming up on the 4th of May, that's a Saturday, in Erie, Pennsylvania. And they're having a little fun with the name Erie, if you know what I mean. And
the banner you mailed us.
Yeah,
I love it.
E-R-I-E.
Yeah.
And the featured speakers there are John, who is the state director for Pennsylvania MUFON, but we also have our dear friend Stanton Friedman, Stan Gordon, certainly as much a leading UFO investigator with the longest imaginable history there in the state of Pennsylvania, and Karen Dolan. A great presenter in her own right, and a number of other speakers. And to get information on that, all you need to do is go to MUFONPA.com for pre-registering or additional information, hotel information, and the like. I would be there, except that I'm going to be in Washington at the National Press Club event, so I've got a conflict, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we will be staying close as far as being in touch with you while you're there at the conference.
Yes, absolutely. And you've got my cell phone number. I'll be happy to give you nightly updates for sure.
Yeah, right. Definitely we're going to cover that.
Yeah.
You know, there's something happening in Rome right now that you've probably heard about.
Right now?
Yeah, with the Pope and the Catholic.
Oh, I guess I have heard about that, yes.
Yeah, but the big event in Rome happens in October.
Well, it sure does for me.
Tell our listeners about that.
I'm honored to. Every couple of years, somewhere in the world, there is a scientific conference around the discoveries of the great scientist, Dr. Wilhelm Reich, whose reputation was in part destroyed greatly because he had the courage in the 1950s to openly discuss and publish around with all of the right bells and whistles and scientific facts and witnesses, his observations of and conclusions about the UFO phenomena. I first became aware of his work when I was still a teenager, and not UFO related, but his other scientific discoveries, and he is, for me, a true hero of humanity whose work has been tremendously distorted and misunderstood. And over the decades, I've made it my business to interview, spend time with, visit the locations, and research everything possible about his UFO-related work. So 2 years ago, for example, I was asked to speak at a conference like this in Greece, a few years before that, one in Oregon, sometime before that, one in Nice, France. And in October, I'll be traveling to Rome to present three papers on Reich and UFOs at a conference on the scientific discoveries of Dr. Reich. And I'm not only really looking forward to it as a presenter, researcher, and a writer, but as somebody who is something of a world traveler and who began their life in the arts and taught painting in New York for years, I've never visited this great city. And so, like many peer review scientific conferences, there is no fee attached, and I'm not getting paid for my work. However, I am going to get put up for 5 or 6 days after the conference with a friend of the conference, and I'm going to get to be introduced to the City of Light, and I am so excited about it.
I can see Peter standing by the fountains singing three coins in a fountain. Well, maybe not.
Who knows?
tell me about this guy, Ryan Sprague.
Yeah, Ryan. Ryan Sprague is an up-and-coming New York actor who has worked in the theater and on the stage, but he has a degree in playwriting. And he's become a friend of mine over the years. He's a young guy, but he's very gifted. He also has a foot in another world. He is a very good UFO investigative writer, and he's had a number of articles published with Open Minds magazine, arguably the dominant publication of its kind in the United States right now.
And did I understand you that he has a stage play about Rendlesham?
Well, what's going on right now is last year he contacted me. We had met earlier. He had interviewed me for Open Minds, and we spent a little time together in New York City, which is where I've lived most of my life. And he contacted me last year to say that he had decided that he wanted to take on a very ambitious project, which was write a play, not a screenplay, to make a movie based on, but a stage play. And I have a great love of theater, and not on Left at Eastgate or Rendlesham as much as the story behind Left at Eastgate, the story of Larry Warren and myself and our years-long struggle to bring this story to public attention.
Well, if you needed some dramatic license, that story certainly got plenty in it.
I have loaned Ryan a great deal of original materials to do his best research from. I hope his best research. I have tremendous confidence in him, including many, many hours of taped conversations between Larry and I. And he has an opportunity to draw from the real things that happened and the way that they were said in creating the characters of Larry Warren and Peter Robbins. I was also very touched that he is weaving into the story a very important third character, namely my late sister Helen, who became a good friend of Larry's, was instrumental in encouraging us to do the work, and who helped out in so many ways over the years, unfortunately.
We've mentioned Helen before, but tell our audience.
Well, my sister Helen was a remarkable young woman in a lot of respects. She was a very accomplished writer and artist in her own right. She was a great poet who is probably best known for folks that know her under her performing name of Helen Wheels as an absolutely electrifying singer-songwriter who had quite a lot of success in the 70s and 80s in kind of the punk revolution and came up through CBGBs with all of the great performers we associate with that period, Patti Smith and the Ramones and the Talking Heads and so many other great groups and individual performers. And Helen wrote a number of hit songs for the great heavy metal group, the Blue Oyster Cult, but she was also had a degree in English literature, was a scholar in a number of respects, a specialist in the study of reptiles, a great chef, a really sweet, wonderful person, and the best sister anybody could have. And she and Larry became very good friends over the years that we worked together. And she was a very important character in our being able to take almost 10 years of our lives to focus in on writing the book that we did.
Well, do you think that this stage play will end up being presented in New York or London?
Well,
or
it certainly will be presented in New York, but maybe only, you know, in an off-Broadway realm. I know Ryan is talented. I know he is taking this project as seriously as anything that he has ever done in his life. I know that he spent all of last week out in Phoenix covering the International UFO Congress and doing interviews and making contacts. And I worked for years in theater management off-Broadway in New York, so we share a love of live theater. And although there have been more movies about UFOs than anyone can count, I'm only aware of a handful of attempts to bring the story to the live stage, and most of them not very successful. The most successful one is the play MJ-12 by the great playwright Marty Martin, which was performed on a number of occasions in 2010, I believe.
We broadcast that.
That's right. And you know what? As a broadcast, as a radio broadcast, it's up there with the greatest radio plays of all time. You don't need to see it to get it. So hats off to Marty, and I'm very confident Ryan is going to produce something important here, and I couldn't be prouder of him for taking the time and effort to take on such a serious and important project. And I must say, I'm very flattered also and a little nervous because it's not my play. He can write whatever he wants. I have no say in it. I'm just acting as a consultant, as is Larry. And it's going to be kind of interesting at some point in the future to go and sit in on a reading, possibly even as early as this spring, and listen to an actor play the part of somebody named Peter Robbins.
That'll be interesting.
I guess.
Marty Martin, we have that play. It's still available on demand.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, on our website. And well, so people can go, they can go to the Roswell section, they'll see it.
I can only encourage listeners to do just that. It is as good as it gets. Marty did all the homework necessary. He knows the story and all the real people backwards and forwards. Of course, it is admittedly a work of nonfiction with a certain amount of fiction because there are things that happen that we can only guess at. And as a artist, as a playwright, I think he did a wonderful job of walking that line. And basically, MJ-12, the play, takes us back to the summer of 1947, and the action cuts back and forth and back and forth between Roswell, New Mexico, and the surrounding areas and the base, and Washington, D.C., and the White House, and the Department of War. It would have been at the time. It was just before it became the Department of Defense, and everybody from, all of the local people that played a part in the story to Harry Truman and James Forrestal are characters in the play. And I have to stress here, you don't have to watch it to enjoy it. It is so well written, although it was great fun to see on the stage.
We put original music with it for the radio show and sound effects and dressed it up. It's an excellent show.
Yes, don't miss it. For anybody that hasn't heard that one, go out of your way, set aside some time, and enjoy the heck out of it. I know I did.
Now we were talking about stage plays, but there's an independent film, I think, under development.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, I will. I haven't been able to talk about it too much because I've been under a non-disclosure agreement, but it is an independent film in development called Apollo Minus Project. And I have been working as a consultant along with a very talented creative team and a wonderful producer for about 16 months now. And it is a project I take very seriously. The bare bones of it is that it opens with the Apollo 11 shot, the very famous shot to the moon. And many of us have felt that it's naive to think that even though NASA is a civilian agency, United States government, so to say, and that all of the space shots have been with, you know, astronauts going out there in peace into the universe, it seems naive to think that there have never been any missions that weren't classified or military in their nature or intelligence related. And so it is a very skillful weaving of what we feel is fact and fiction around the darker side of the UFO cover-up. And the play opens with the Apollo mission returning and a secret mission being launched. The astronauts involved in that go to the dark side of the moon where they encounter you-know-what. And when they return, the men who are involved in the mission are never the same. And the character that we're focused in on, a really sterling Neil Armstrong kind of character, immediately upon returning, becomes very reclusive and several months later disappears and is never seen or heard from again. Now, we jump ahead now 40 years. His grandson, a character named Daniel, is a bright, rising young documentary filmmaker, increasingly obsessed with what happened to his grandfather. And the story of the film is that we open learning that Daniel has now disappeared in somewhere in Nevada, and it does not look good. And the film you're about to see is from all of the footage of the interviews and the information he's put together that his colleagues have put together.
And when will this be out? Do you have any idea?
Well, I'm guessing next year. We're working very hard on bringing everything together right now in a number of aspects, and this has really been is a process of education for me. I've consulted in small ways on films and lots of documentaries and television shows, but I've never been a consultant ongoing straight through a process. Already, we've been working together for more than a year, and I don't think that filming will be done ultimately until this autumn. So I am hopeful that we will see this in theaters next year. And for any of your listeners that want to get a bit more of an idea of this film, simply go to apollo-project.com to the film's website, where there is, I think, a very intriguing trailer and some information on the film. And I will be talking more about it with anybody that is going to listen as the year goes on and as I'm cleared to say more about the film and what we're bringing to it. I will also say, and I can say this now, that the screenwriter, a great and talented guy named Nick Ronan, came up with an idea that I thought was absolutely brilliant. Namely, that so many UFO-related films, when they come to the subject of ufologists, they very understandably create characters based on people like our friend Stanton Friedman or the late Bud Hopkins or Dr. John Mack or what have you. Nick's idea was to approach actual leading figures in the work and get them to play brief cameos of playing themselves in the film. And I thought that was extremely engaging. And again, because this is a very skillful mixture of truth and fiction, of being set in a totally documentary style, that it's going to be all the more intriguing to see people like me and a number of very well-known colleagues. And I, you're going to have to get me back on the show in a couple of months for me to give you those names, but I'll say they're among the best known in the field, playing characters based on themselves, essentially playing themselves in brief segments in the film. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I read the script, so I know what I'm talking about here. Our producer Lisa Kwok, is doing a brilliant job of bringing it all together with, again, a very terrific creative team working with Nick and Lisa, and I'm very proud to be a part of the project.
We had a couple of emails while you were talking about somebody else playing you in the play. That both of those emails said Peter ought to play himself. He's a very talented guy.
Well, thank you. And the fact is, not a lot of people in ufology know this, but I've studied and audited acting classes for 25 years, not because I feel I want to be an actor, but because of all the things I've ever done. Working in live theater with actors is about as exciting and rewarding a thing as I've ever done. And in the process of doing it, I made a very dear friend who continues to be a dear friend, and for my money, he's the finest stage director and acting coach working in America today, and his name is John Strasberg, and he spends part of the year teaching abroad and directing abroad, but part of it in New York, and when he is in the city working, I always sit in on his classes when I can. John's father is far and away the best-known acting coach in American history, the great Lee Strasberg, who mentored everybody from Marilyn Monroe to Elizabeth Taylor to Paul Newman to Eli Wallach and on down the great pantheon of 20th century American film actors, Al Pacino. In fact, it was Al's influence that got Lee the opportunity to play the great gangster Hyman Roth in Godfather II. I'm not up for, I don't know if I could play myself on stage. That's just too weird. But I'm happy to be a small part of somebody else doing the job. But whoever sent that in, thank you very much. I'm honored.
Now, Peter, you're well known for Rendlesham, but you and I both have had, I guess, a second career involved in Roswell.
We sure have.
For years.
Yes.
And years. I understand some new things may be developing there.
Yes. I'm delighted to say that our dear friend and soul sister, the great Renee Roach, for me, the heart and soul of so many of the great Roswell summer events, is back at it and is behind a wonderful event that's going to be coming up this coming summer, Roswell Film Fest and Cosmicon, not to be confused with Comic-Con. And that is going to take place back in dear old Roswell, New Mexico, June 28th through 30th this summer. And I'm sure hoping that I'm going to be involved in some way. We're talking about it right now. And there is nobody in the world of UFO-related events that I would rather work with than Renee Roach. She is a force in nature, one of the dearest and most dedicated people I've ever met, and a dear friend of both you and me.
That's right. I second the motion.
Yeah, she is something else.
We are going to have to wrap this up. Time is getting us here.
Yeah.
I've got Colin Bennett coming up, and he's going to talk about George Adamski.
Yeah, he's the man.
Yeah, and so
he wrote the book.
Yeah, so that'll be coming up next. A lot of people, we started kind of on a lark doing some early 50s Southern California stuff.
Yeah,
and it's taken a life of its own, you know.
Well, I must say, I think Colin's a great writer. He's a great investigator, and his book on Adamski is. It really impressed me, and like a lot of American researchers, I'm not sure what to think of the reality behind Mr. Adamski's claims, but I am impressed by Colin's wonderful work to bring that story to a wider public, and the terrific amount of research that he did, and I have some idea the amount of work that goes into that. So please say hi for me. I think he's going to be a great guest.
We have a couple of minutes, all we have. You got anything else you want to bring up?
Well, just to say that the story keeps going on. I have a feeling right now that for a number of reasons, we are in a time where things really are beginning to change on a deeper level than they have in all the years this has been going on. I can't prove it. I can't give you statistics and facts. And I honestly feel that what's behind it is not additional revelations or extra proof, but that more and more people are beginning to change on a much more profound level in their own lives than we've seen before, and as such be more open to looking at this material without the concern of the fear of ridicule that has done so much damage for so many decades now and has become kind of a specialty area of research for me. I'm just fascinated by how it came to be that if I said in any other context, hey, Jerry, my next door neighbor, guess what? Yesterday afternoon and last night, I was out in the yard and I looked up and I saw this thing in the sky. And either I couldn't recognize it, I never saw anything like it before, or it did something that a plane or a helicopter couldn't do. I mean, if in another dimension, you would just say, gee, isn't that interesting, Peter? I wonder what it was. As opposed to the way that we in the Western world have been conditioned to think about the subject of, gee, what's wrong with Peter? I thought he was a pretty sane, straight-up guy. Has he gone a little mental on me? Has he become mystical? Has he become a hoaxer? Does he want to write a best-selling book? Anything except, gee, I wonder what Peter saw, and why is it, how is it that the subject of UFOs got tarred and feathered with such a loopy reputation?
And that's going to be a subject of a new show we'll have to do one of these days.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just finished a major paper on it that I haven't presented yet, and I'll come back whenever you like, and we'll pick up where we leave off here with just that topic.
Okay, Peter Robbins, our time is up. Thanks for being on.
A pleasure, really, Jerry.
Appreciate you listening. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.